Radio Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Pride Month, and the outrage of bold and healing residency for LGBTQ plus writers is at NACL Theater, created as a haven for queer storytellers to write, share, and grow without explanation. The program offers a space for creativity, deep connection, at a time when those voices are needed more than ever. We'll find out more. Wayne County Historical Society is taking a step back in time this summer. Old jails, one-room schoolhouses, canal locks, and two brand new exhibits. Feeling stressed about the fast pace of life? Coming up, we talk with Sarah Sika about the new Meditate Sullivan County initiative, bringing free transcendental meditation sessions to the community, no matter your background or beliefs. And a sneak peek at the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra's upcoming weekend concerts with Classical Kent. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. China says President Trump and leader Xi Jinping have held a phone call. NPR's Emily Fang reports they last spoke by phone in January.
China's official state news agency announced the call, but did not give more details about what was discussed. The call comes as both countries accused the other this week of violating a temporary trade truce. Trump wrote this week as well that China's Xi Jinping is, quote, extremely hard to make a deal with. The two leaders last met during Trump's first term in 2019.
NPR's Emily Fang reporting. Yesterday, Trump announced he had spoken with Russian President Vladimir Putin for well over an hour. Writing online, Trump said he and the Russian leader discussed the war in Ukraine. Trump said Putin told him Russia would respond to Ukraine's recent attack on its air bases. The Pentagon says President Trump has nominated Air Force Lieutenant General Alexis Grinkiewicz to be NATO's next Supreme Allied Commander. He's also being nominated to the grade of general. Grinkiewicz will also serve as the commander of U.S. forces in Europe. Stocks opened lower this morning as the European Central Bank cut interest rates again. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell about 130 points in early trading.
The ECB cut its benchmark interest rate for the eighth time in just over a year. Here in the U.S., the Federal Reserve has held interest rates steady since December, partly out of concern that President Trump's tariffs could rekindle inflation. Congressional forecasters say those tariffs are likely to lead to higher inflation and slower economic growth. Forecasters also say tariffs could cut federal deficits by $2.8 trillion over the next decade, if they remain in place. Procter & Gamble plans to cut 7,000 jobs over the next 2 years, or about 6% of its worldwide workforce. The maker of Tide detergent and Gillette Razors is trying to cut costs in the face of tariffs and cautious consumers. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Some current and former Census Bureau workers tell NPR the Trump administration's push to pool government data records is making it harder to convince people to participate in federal surveys. NPR's Hansi Luong reports many experts are concerned about how that could make future census results and other key statistics less reliable.
The push by the Trump administration's DOGE team to access and compile government records has sparked investigations and lawsuits claiming privacy violations. Now, some current and former Census Bureau workers tell NPR that push has become one of the reasons people cite when declining to share their information for the federal government's ongoing surveys. Nancy Bates, a retired researcher for the Bureau, says this new complication adds to a decades-long fall in survey response rates and trust in government.
This is kind of like a tsunami, if you will, pushing the public to have higher mistrust levels. So yeah, I think it's going to take years, to be honest, to get back to where we were.
The Census Bureau's acting director, Ron Jarman, says in a statement that new technology and data science are helping to, quote, efficiently produce high-quality statistics. Anzi Luong, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. President Trump has issued a new travel ban. People from 12 different countries cannot come to the U.S. at all. Travelers from seven other nations have partial bans on travel. Trump says it's needed to keep the country safe from harm. He cited the case of the suspect in the fiery Boulder, Colorado attack that left 15 people injured. But the suspect in that case is Egyptian, and Trump did not put Egypt on the travel ban list. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro is suing the Department of Agriculture. This is over the agency's attempt to cancel a national food purchasing program. The Democratic governor is fighting for $13 million slated for Pennsylvania farms this year. Jackson White reports.
The Local Food Purchase Assistance Cooperative Agreement aids states in buying food from local farms to give to schools, childcare facilities, and food banks. In March, the USDA told Shapiro's administration that it planned to cancel the food program because it no longer aligned with the agency's priorities. Now, after months of trying to get USDA funds for the program, Governor Shapiro says Pennsylvania is taking the agency to court.
We have exhausted all options to be able to resolve this matter simply through dialogue. And I'm tired of waiting for someone to stand up for our farmers and our food banks. That task falls to us.
The USDA declined to comment on the pending litigation. For NPR News, I'm Jackson White in Harrisburg.
A private Japanese company will try again later today to land a tiny probe on the moon. The first attempt by the private company iSpace failed 2 years ago. That's when its original probe smashed into the moon's surface. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Eric and Wendy Schmidt through the Schmidt Family Foundation, working toward a healthy, resilient, secure world for all. On the web at theschmidt.org. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. This week, a powerful gathering of voices is taking place in the Catskills. The Outrage, a queer writer's residency, has returned to NACL for its second year, offering a week-long creative haven for LGBTQ plus playwrights, screenwriters, and storytellers. Founded by playwright and Yulin resident C. Julian Jimenez, The Outrage was born from a need to create space where queer writers can write, share, and grow without having to justify or explain their queerness. It's not just a residency, it's a refuge. This Saturday night, the public is invited to hear the results. Excerpts from the new works in progress, shared by a dynamic group of writers. Joining us now is Julian Jimenez and one of the writers, CQ Quintana, to tell us more about the residency's purpose and the urgent need to uplift queer voices in today's America. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Julian, let's start with you a little bit. You created this, as we said, not just as a residency, but as a haven, the space for writers to write and share and grow without explanation. What did you envision when you launched this?
You know, I envisioned a place for writers to come together and not have to, and queer writers usually in other rooms have to explain queerness. We have to get past the whole, oh, you're so authentic and brave.
Is that what you mean by explaining your queerness?
Yeah. So in other rooms where, oh, there are not queer people, they hear our stories and go, oh, like, that's so authentic and brave, but they don't get to the meat of the problem because they're afraid of stepping in it, shall we say. Right? So this is a way that we get past all that because all of us are in the same sort of boat. We understand queer identity and we can get to the meat of the work and skip all of that. So we have like real notes with each other and then also real fellowship. It's very rare to have rooms where you have an entirely queer room.
CQ, I think you're a returning writer to this or no?
No, this is actually, oh man, I wish.
You're first. Okay, got
bring
it.
Me back anytime, Julian. No, this is actually my first time here at the Outrage. And it's been totally fantastic.
What drew you to this residency?
I mean, honestly, when I was invited, I was just really thrilled because, and I've talked to Julian about this, like, you know, I was involved with the Lambda Literary Retreat back in the day, and that's really a workshop, you know, and it's a totally different environment, obviously, where you're building work and bringing material that already exists. But to have a generative space, especially like on the East Coast, there's really nothing like this. And so it's just really, really special. Again, just to kind of repeat everything that Julian's already said, but just to be in community with people and to have that kind of freedom and to not sort of be holding back in any way because you don't have to feel limited by the folks that you're around. It's just a really special place to be and to have that freedom to write.
Take us into the room. What does a typical day look like in the residency and how would you describe the energy and creativity that's going on?
Yeah, it's actually really super loose. So the writers can choose how they want to do it. We have the church next to us at NACL, right? The performance space and the house, and the weather is so wonderful. So everyone everyone is writing in different spaces. We have communal, meals. And then after dinner, we have a space where we share. We share work and we share pages with each other. And then we give each other feedback based on the work. And that's really the biggest structure of it, because that's the most important part for us to be able to share what we're working on and get feedback in really constructive ways from our peers.
And you've gone further in terms of describing feedback at The Outrage as rooted in care, not just constructive,
but absolutely
rooted in care. What do you mean by that, and why is that so central to the process?
Well, I think it's really important that the artist is in control of their feedback session. So, because sometimes you're not ready for a note, but people want to give it to you. They want to give you their opinion, but you're not necessarily ready.
Right? Everybody loves a note.
Yeah.
Right. So it's important that the artist is in control of their feedback session and feel safe. And honestly, queer people need that constantly, especially in this day and age. We need to feel safe in a time where our rights are under attack.
And I want to talk a little bit more about that, but I want to go back into the room a little bit and that feedback, especially for UCQ in the first time being here. How does that care-based environment impact you and your work?
I mean, I think when you're generating fresh material, it's just such a vulnerable space, period. And so to be able to have that level of trust, you know, when you're sharing work, and to be in kind of a loving space that's just sort of the base level, is so important, because then you're allowed to really have that freedom to dig deeper, you know, because it allows you to feel like, okay, I can stretch myself. I can go to all these places. And not to say that there's not critique of some kind, because of course, you know, we're in a space, we're all professionals here. But I do think that a big part of this space is about generating material and freedom of expression, you know?
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Julian Jimenez and CQ Quintana about The Outrage, a queer writer's residency that's at NACL for its second year. Julian, you mentioned this moment in America, why it's important to have voices heard at this time. You're creating a work at a time when queer and trans stories are increasingly under attack.
Yeah.
Legislation, censorship, cultural backlash. How does that reality shape the urgency of this residency?
Oh, I think places and areas and spaces like this are at the most, it's the time where it's most needed. You know, it's a cliche, but it's actually true, right? Because so many of these spaces are being eliminated, funding is being stripped. So, you know, how
Pride,
this is
Pride Month being renamed?
Pride Month being renamed. Absolutely. Yeah. All these like military ships being renamed, Harvey Milk's name being stripped off of a ship. I mean, it's about cruelty. And that's why I think going back to what we were just talking about before, care is so important in the room, because we're being faced with such cruelty in the way that we are being stripped of our identity and told that we don't belong and we don't exist.
How does storytelling then resist this form of erasure?
I mean, in my mind, it's the best thing about storytelling. I mean, it's our fundamental instinct. It's one of our fundamental instincts as human beings, and just to be able to connect with other people. And I think that the only way forward, I mean, it sounds cheesy to say, is through a loving connection, and to sort of, and stories are the way that we do that, the way that we've always done that. And so I think just for us to keep going and persisting and to tell our stories as they are is the only way that we're going to move forward.
And our stories need to be documented, right? Yeah. They've been taken away and stripped from archives for so many centuries, right? It's important that we document what is happening right now, so history doesn't repeat in the future.
Well, something similar is seemingly going on too, by, as you said, like erasure of names, maybe symbolically on a ship, but that's a form of erasing history.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What responsibility or power even do you think queer artists have at this time in our country?
I think queer artists have always been, throughout the generations, you know, the most powerful artists. I think that queer artists are unabashed, unafraid. I think there's so much. I mean, when I think of the greatest artists of all time, they're queer artists. And I mean, I don't know what it is, Dad.
Yeah, because I think that we just don't live linear, straight paths. Yeah. Pardon the pun. Because we've had to navigate legislation, things, roadblocks. Marriage is fairly new, right? So we've never had a straight path. So we've had to sort of do odds and turns, and that comes out in our storytelling, which is really interesting to great masses that have never heard of stories told in this way.
And there's that beautiful Ocean Vuong quote that I'm gonna butcher it, but where he says something along the lines of that, like, it's actually in queerness that he was able to find, you know, he was able to find like beauty and excitement and, you know, sort of a path that was beyond what he ever could have imagined. Mm. And I think that actually queerness, in sort of obviously all the difficulties that, you know, our community has faced, what's so powerful about it is that we have been able to sort of, you know, make amazing lemonade.
Yes.
How does it feel to bring this work to the rural area of the Catskills? And what do you hope that the local community takes away from this?
You know, it's exciting, you know, and we always hope that the people that are going to come are the people that need to see work like this,
yeah.
Which isn't always the case. Usually you're always preaching to the choir, right? If people hear a queer writer's residency, they're going to want to, they'll be like, oh, that's not for me, but it is for you. It's for all of us because we're all in this together. So I encourage non-queer people. I encourage all of the Catskills to come on Saturday.
Let's back to the writing. CQ, what sort of, evolving for you or developing as themes or questions surfacing in your work during this residency?
You know, actually, it was funny. I was just talking to Julian about I feel like I'm really realizing, you know, and I've been working as a writer for a long time, but just sort of these ideas of utopia and sort of the ways in which my work kind of delves into ideas of transformation and loss in certain environments. So actually being in the Catskills and kind of directly, actually, I'm sort of thinking about this project that's associated with Neversink and the Neversink Reservoir. But I think that that's really where I'm kind of am right now, is thinking in the face of this moment in time and all of the sort of loss and great change that we're going through.
And Julian, you're hosting and creating. Are you creating some new stuff during this time?
I am.
How does that impact your process being the host and creator?
Oh, it's, you know, most of the hosting and the organization of all that happens before the week. I'm a triple Capricorn, so I'm really good at that. I'm creating a new piece, a piece that's been hanging around my brain for a very long time. I'm finally finishing it here. And the inspiration of just being around other queer people writing in the same spaces, even if we're not speaking, it is the only way that this play could actually get finished. I'm working on a play and a memoir at the same time.
Well, you know, just a few things.
Just a few things.
Just a few things,
yeah,
happening.
Keeping it light.
We'll keep it light. Yeah, exactly. So you're back for The Outrage in its second year here.
Yeah.
What do you see for its future? What's your dream there for the
residency? I believe we're definitely going to do it next year again as well. I know that's for sure. I see it. Yeah. I'm hoping that it grows. You know, part of this, we've also partnered with Two Queens Coffee and One Grand Books in Narrowsburg and created a queer book club called Spinebenders. So The Outrage is also sponsoring that. We have one coming up this Sunday at 1 at Two Queens.
And the public reading here is coming up Saturday. More details on that.
Saturday at 7:30. So each writer will be sharing 5 to 10 minutes of work that they're either in process or work that's similar to the work that's in process. So we'll do readings of 4 writers, have an intermission, come back, have the other 4 writers, and then have some fellowship after and just like mingle, and people can talk about, you know, talk with the writers about the work.
It'll be a good time.
CQ, what are you hoping you take away from this residency? What do you think, or what do you want to stay with you beyond the writing even?
Yeah, I mean, I think the peacefulness. I think just in this moment, everything has been really chaotic, I think, for so many of us. And I think that's one of the most, it's such a majestic setting. And to be in such a loving place at NACL, I was just talking to Julian about this earlier, but like, to be in a place that's so supportive of this residency and making such a point to support us in this moment. Like, I mean, that's, what more can you ask for? I want to leave here with a bit of that peace and a bit of that love, you know?
And also, we've had such support, not only from NACL, who's been incredible, but also both of us are published through Theatrical Rights Worldwide, who has donated and contributed money to us for, and promised to do it for the next 2 years after this. So they have been really amazing to help fund all the things we need to do. So it's, we're very proud of it. And even last year's group has like a text thread that has still been going on for an entire year on WhatsApp. I get notifications every day.
Don't worry, we're going to be the better group.
Yes.
Those are probably some fun group chats there.
Yeah.
Julian Jimenez and CQ Quintana, The Outrage, a queer writer's residency, is at NACL Saturday. There's more information at nacl.org. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much for having us. Thanks. All right, bye.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, history just isn't in books. It's in the buildings and landscapes and stories of Wayne County. Up next, a visit with the Historical Society to find out what's new, what's old, and what's happening this summer. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is Ron Chernow. He'll talk about his newest biography, Mark Twain. It covers the very colorful life of America's first literary celebrity. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Have you heard what your neighbors are saying about the threat to public media?
I think that's totally unacceptable.
WJFF connects our whole community together.
We depend on truth, we depend on accuracy, and we depend on fair press.
I'm definitely protesting against any cuts to our local station.
Public radio is under threat, and the stakes have never been higher. Visit protectmypublicmedia.org and tell Congress to protect Radio Catskill while there's still time.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This summer, history is alive and well in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. From a one-room schoolhouse in the 1870s to the original stone jail near the courthouse in Honesdale, the Wayne County Historical Society is working to preserve the people, places, and stories that shaped the region. Two new exhibits just open at the main museum, and there's a full slate of programs planned for the summer season. Here with more is Carol Henry Dunn, Executive Director of the Wayne County Historical Society. Carol, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for having us on your show.
Well, thanks for being here. Let's tell people about the mission of the Wayne County Historical Society, the big picture. What do you aim to preserve and share with the community?
Right. Our mission is to preserve artifacts and documents, stories, photographs that relate to the history of Wayne County, Pennsylvania, and to keep those archivally stored, or in most cases today, digitally stored, so that they're available for future generations, for researchers and so forth, and for active book writers, you know, anybody, newspaper article writers, anybody who wants to come into the museum and find out more about Wayne County history. We also preserve as much as possible places. In other words, we have Lock 31, our canal park down at near Hawley on Route 6, and we're working actively to have those 17 acres be a history immersion for anyone who goes there to walk or listen to programs. So those are the kinds of things we do every day, Tim.
Well, now, you know, we have a studio there in Honesdale at the Cooperage, and I've been over to Honesdale. Usually I'm over at the Weiss Market or Alpine House, but I didn't even know there was a museum in Honesdale. Tell us more about what visitors can experience there.
Sure. The main museum in Honesdale is one of several places that we interpret local history and have great programming and open houses and so forth. The main museum is located at 810 Main Street in Honesdale. It is one of the oldest buildings still standing in Honesdale. It's well maintained. It was built in 1860 as the company offices of the D&H, or the Delaware and Hudson Canal Company. Their big project, the largest project up to that point in United States history, was to haul coal from the coal fields over Moosic Mountain into the Carbondale-Jessup area, and to haul that coal to the market by dragging it and then finally canal boating it 108 miles to the Hudson River, whereupon it would be transferred to bigger barges, taken north or most usually south to the metropolitan New York area. So that's the kind of history that we interpret here in our building. We have a whole huge part of the museum called Movin' Energy. That's what Honesdale was built for. Without coal, an innocent four-letter word, there wouldn't be a Honesdale. There wouldn't be a Hawley the way we know it. It's all because of the hauling of this coal. So we tell that story, and then we have changing exhibits. Right now, we just opened two wonderful exhibits.
Yeah, tell us more about those. What stories are they telling there at the main museum?
Yes. The exhibits that we just opened are two. One is photographs. It's a photograph exhibit from some very early photographs that we own here at the historical site. And we don't display the originals. They were taken in 1860. So, of course, light and touching and exposure to people is not good for them. But we had copies made. And we have 14 of those very early photos, the earliest known photographs of Honesdale, Carbondale, Waymark, and so forth, with 14 of them on display. And it's just amazing to me to remember the building that I'm standing in right now was built in 1860, and these photographs were taken in 1860. So at the time that the photographs were taken, the museum was brand new. We can also see the Jewish synagogue, which is located a few blocks from here in downtown Honesdale, in the photographs, built around 1849. There in all its glory. The old stone jail, which was built around 1859, is shown in the photographs. The earliest photos that we have to document what Honesdale and other spots along the transportation corridor looked like at that early date. So we're excited about that exhibit. And our second wonderful exhibit that just opened on May 3rd is called The History of the Cots Underwear Factory. They made a lot more than underwear, though. That might have been their name, but they were located here in Honesdale for almost 100 years.
Wow.
Closed in 1991, opened 1898. And up to like the 1970s, along in there, when people in the United States were definitely still manufacturing our own clothing, they had as many as 650 workers,
wow,
mostly women, at sewing machines. Now, there were many other jobs for strong men, for example, to load things, drive trucks. You know, it was just a huge operation. Today, most of our clothing is not made in our own country, but at that point, it still was. And it's just a wonderful exhibit.
Yeah, right there in Honesdale, too. What kinds of programs or events does the Historical Society have planned for the summer season? It's heating up.
Right. Well, first of all, our two exhibits are open, and our main museum is open Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And another major part of what we contribute to the community is our canal park at called the D&H Canal Park at Lock 31. You can find it using your phone. It's free to the public from sunrise to sunset every day of the year. And down there, we have a big event planned. One can go and walk there anytime. You can walk on 2.5 miles of generally flat level towpath trails. You can walk down to the Lackawaxen River on the river trails and so forth. So on 17 acres, just a wonderful place to go. And you probably see a bald eagle flying over your head and so forth. But as far as programming is concerned, on Saturday, August 16th, we have our annual canal festival. It'll be our 12th annual. And of course, we skipped one in 2020, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But this is our 12th annual. It goes from 10 in the morning to 4 that afternoon. And that day, we have three different stages of things going on with live events and children's events and vendors and demonstrators, everything revolving around the year 1870 or so. In other words, we're not selling any modern items or showing modern processes, but things that harken back to the canal era. The canal era being defined locally as 1825 to about 1900. So we have wonderful things going on that day. I'll just read a few: fly fishing demonstrations, traditional folk music and folk instruments, tours of our building, which sits there, which was built in 1820. The huge red building on the right-hand side as you travel from Holmesdale towards Hawley. There'll be tours of the Daniels Farmhouse and Frank Little Bear, who has he is a Native American and helps communities to understand better the modern way that Native Americans contribute and live their lives. And he has a group called Red Visions Native American Dance Team. They will be performing two times that day, a guided walk through the woods with a man named John Harvey, and the list goes on from there. Yeah. So we have lots of things going on that day. Mark it on your calendar right now, Tim.
I will.
Saturday, August 16th. And other programs go on as the year goes by, but those are our main things going on right now. Just the museum being here with all sorts of great exhibits, and Lock 31, D&H Canal Park at Lock 31. Oh, I forgot to mention at our museum, we do have the 100-year-old replica, full-size replica, of the Stourbridge Lion.
Yeah.
Which is the first locomotive to turn a wheel on a commercial track in the Western Hemisphere. We used to be modest and say in the United States, but we know that Canada didn't beat us and Mexico and South America didn't beat us. So we can make a bigger, bolder statement. First locomotive to run on a track in the Western Hemisphere. And we have its replica here.
Wow.
The parts of the original still exist, Tim, but they don't look like a train anymore. It was, after it was no longer being used, about 1875, people from the Smithsonian Institute came to Carbondale at that time and got parts of the original Stourbridge Lion and took it to the Smithsonian. And you can see parts of it on display in Baltimore at the B&O Museum.
Well,
but we're fortunate. We have the full-size replica right here in Holmesdale.
Harold, you are keeping busy preserving that history in Wayne County. Thank you so much. There's a lot more at the website, waynehistorypa.com, and, of course, on Facebook and Instagram. That's Carol Henry Dunn, Executive Director of the Wayne County Historical Society. Carol, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great summer.
Thank you, Tim. We'll be glad to see everybody at all of our events this summer. Thanks.
Yes. All right. Up next, we're diving into a powerful tool to fight stress and find some calm in today's busy world. Stay tuned for a conversation with Sarah Sika from Meditate Sullivan County. It's coming up next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
On the next Jazz Night in America, a drummer seeks a larger-than-life sound by unlocking the potential of a double string quartet.
I am kind of incapable of having small ideas.
It's Nate Smith's Kinfolk with members of the Memphis Symphony Orchestra. That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Join me Sunday at 8 here on Radio Catskill.
Hi, I'm Tim Bruno, General Manager at Radio Catskill. NEPA Gives starts tonight at 7, and we need you. Your donation helps keep local news, diverse voices, and culture on the air for everyone. Now more than ever, your support makes a difference. We're navigating uncertainty with the strength of our community behind us. Donate at nepagives.org beginning tonight at 7.
The Daily draws on the unrivaled quality and expertise of the New York Times Global Newsroom. Our mission is to tell stories more deeply and to incorporate a new kind of transparency. Weekday evenings at 6:30 here on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Sullivan Allies Leading Together, committed to ensuring the safety of our community. Protect those most important by keeping medications in a secure space. Be a part of the solution. More at saltcares.com.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, we're having a little trouble reaching Sarah Sicca about Meditate Sullivan County. We're going to move on to talk about some upcoming concerts this weekend, though, at the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra. They're bringing the magical musical experience to the region with two special performances. Here to tell us more, our own classical kit and Andrew Tremblay from the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Andrew. Thanks for joining us on the phone this morning. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Kit, for always having me. I really appreciate the time.
Well, you know, this is, I hadn't realized this, but next year is actually going to be the 90th anniversary of Peter and the Wolf. And I was just trying to imagine how many thousands and thousands of children in many countries got their introduction to the parts of the orchestra through this and have enjoyed it over and over and over and over. I mean, I used to put it on with the kids in the neighborhood as a ballet every summer. So it's like it has a dear spot in my heart.
Oh, it's so great to hear. I was definitely one of those kids, you know. I mean, that's every time we listen to music, even now, we're always creating stories to put in our head. And it's so nice to have such a brilliant piece of music, so well orchestrated, which is just something that's so easy to grab onto and associate instruments and colors with stories and characters. So as you get, you know, become a more refined listener, you can do this yourself, you know, with any piece of music, not just one that has narration attached to it.
Right. And I would imagine as your daughter gets a little older, she's going to have that experience too.
That's what I'm hoping. That's why she's coming to both of these concerts. So, you know, starting young.
Yeah, well, Prokofiev had two kids when he composed it, which is how he was familiar with the people at the Children's Theater who asked him to do this. And I'm just so happy that happened, you know?
Absolutely. It's one of the greatest treasures that we have in all of our symphonic repertoire.
And, you know, the fact that it's was written for children, I think these concerts are going to be extra special because of the fact that you're going to be featuring soloists, two in each concert, two different ones in each concert, who have come out of, you know, local music programs and grown to be the caliber of musicians that they are.
Absolutely. You know, if obviously, you know, Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra, we've been around since about 2016, but before then, you know, Nesson Cultural Arts was focused primarily on education from the very beginning. This is a program that was started by former retired music teachers and school teachers that had a passion for the arts. And, you know, the goal was to always create what does a community arts program look like? Monticello School District already had a very strong music department for a long time, but they sometimes, you know, kids need extra. What you get during the day, even when I was in school there, my private lessons were one in a group of four. So, you know, and you're talking about a 40-minute period, a lot of these times these students are only getting maybe 10 minutes a week for private instruction on their lesson. So starting this program, it started off with private lessons, small ensembles, integrated art institutes for the summer, and it just expanded and it grew to more and more students who certainly don't necessarily have aspirations of going on to performance for the rest of their life, but they want to continue bringing music with them no matter where they go. And a lot of colleges where these students end up going, you know, they still like to have anyone who's involved in their school orchestra program. So all of these students, two of them will go into music, but, you know, our bass player, Kenny, he has aspirations of going to MIT. And what is the first thing he does? He looks at MIT Symphony Orchestra and how can I join and still be involved in that?
Oh, that's a great thing to hear that, you know, that People put a lot of passion into this, and this might not be what they want for their career, but the idea that they can continue to grow as musicians also while
Absolutely.
Pursuing other things is so important.
Absolutely.
You know, not just
we
for
all
them.
Need a creative but, outlet somewhere.
Right, but also for the way it builds audiences. I mean, you know, you can't really be in the performing arts if there aren't any audiences. So these programs also are, you know, really help create audiences. So tell us
Absolutely.
A little bit about the other young people who are going to be performing with you.
Yeah, of course. You know, we were really excited by all these students. They've been working on their repertoire throughout the entire year. NISMA was the first thing that was really popping up in their head. But they all went through a rigorous audition at the end of the year about a month ago, where Akiko and I, we listened to see what their performance was, and they just knocked it out of the park. So we ended up choosing four soloists. Belle Zhao, who is our violin soloist, she will be playing the Brook Violin Concerto, the first movement, and she will be going on to college next year. She's going to be majoring in music performance at SUNY Purchase, which we are thrilled for that. Kenny Waltz, as I mentioned, is the one that has aspirations of going to MIT, scored a perfect 100 on his NISMA All-State audition using the Koussevitzky. So, you know, obviously time will tell, but we're hoping he's going to be an excellent candidate to go to All-State next December in Rochester. Emiliano Lima, a very strong candidate who just came into his own and found a place to really explore his personality throughout these past 3 years. He's going to be a senior next year in the music program. And, you know, again, that kid who just worked his tail off as much as he could and played a beautiful audition. And then we have Jenna, he'll be playing the Telemann Viola Concerto. And then finally, we have Jenna DeFrank, another junior. She has aspirations of majoring in forensic science. But again, still wants to minor in music if she can. That, you know, obviously depends on the schools that she's looking at. But she will be playing the Saint-Saëns Cello Concerto, the first movement. Remarkable talents. We look forward to hearing all of these kids. And, you know, how rare for an opportunity for them to be performing in front of a symphonic ensemble. Of course, you know, we're not having a full orchestra this time around. Excuse Emmy. She's a...
That's okay. Emmy's joining in with some music there.
Absolutely. But yeah, it was just a nice opportunity to arrange these concertos for 10 players, still keeping the essence of a symphonic ensemble and giving them the rare opportunity of collaborating at the highest level with some of the most talented artists I've had a chance to work with.
Well, that sounds like it's a great opportunity for them and a great opportunity for our community to hear these talented musicians. So you're going
Absolutely.
To be giving two performances, and it makes it very convenient because one is in the evening and one is in the afternoon. And, you know, that gives people options. So can you give us some details about that?
Yeah, of course. So the first concert will be Saturday night, June 7th. And we're going to be doing that concert at 6 o'clock. You know, obviously, as I mentioned, that my daughter, Emmy, she's about 17 months old. She'll be coming to the concert. And, you know, most of our children do have early bedtime. So we wanted to make sure it was going to be a short program that would be accessible to kids of all ages. I suspect the concert will be an hour and a half at most, which I think is an appropriate length for our young audiences. So we'll be doing that Saturday night, 6 o'clock. And then also DVAA will be continuing their presenting partnership with us. They will be presenting our 1 o'clock concert on Sunday the 8th at the Tustin Theater in Narrowsburg.
Well, that sounds like that would be a lovely outing on a Sunday afternoon. You know, people can go down to Calicoon to the farmer's market and then head up to Narrowsburg and make a whole day of it.
Absolutely. And it looks like it's going to be a sunny day, so that should make it all the more enjoyable.
Well, that sounds good. So tickets are always available at the door, but people can also make reservations online, correct?
That is correct. We have Nesson Cultural Arts has a Linktree account, which will bring you to a Give Lively website. That'll be for the Saturday night performance only. On Sunday, we would ask you to go to the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance website. If you go to their events page, you'll be able to see the concert information for Peter and the Wolf, and you can reserve your tickets online there. But of course, they're always available at the door as well.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Andrew. I really appreciate your taking the time this morning. I know you're very busy getting ready for the weekend and everything else you do. So,
oh, that's okay, Kit. I really appreciate the time that you make for us. It makes all the difference in the world just to spread the word out of SECO to our community.
Well, thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Kit. Always great to talk to Andrew and to just remember we have such a great group of artists and musicians in our area. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Sarah Sika about Meditate Sullivan County and how you could potentially use transcendental meditation to escape from the stress of the world. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, we take you to a special kind of quinceañera, a doble quince, a double 15th, a 30th birthday party, when Frank Rojas celebrates his special queer day.
It's my family also seeing for the first time, like, my gay family.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
The demonization of fact-based journalism is one of democracy's biggest threats, as the number of local newsrooms has dwindled, leaving disinformation to fill the void. This station is an oasis amid all the noise and fiction by building bridges and holding people to account. We do it thanks to you. You give us the tools we need to fight attacks on truth by donating to this station. Here's how.
Give what you can at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This morning we're joined by Sarah Sika, National Director of Transcendental Meditation for Nurses, Education Director for Transcendental Meditation for Women, and a certified Transcendental Meditation teacher. She's here to tell us about a new Meditate Sullivan County initiative, part of a nationwide effort to help people manage stress and improve well-being through the practice of transcendental meditation. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Stress. Well-timed, Sarah. Well-timed.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about transcendental meditation. I think that when you hear it, they may not know what it is or have maybe the wrong impression. And how does it differ from other techniques for meditation?
Great question. So you can just call it TM because I know transcendental meditation is very wordy. It's a simple mental technique practiced for 20 minutes twice a day, sitting comfortably with the eyes closed. It's not a religion, not a belief system, lifestyle. Anyone can practice it. And it's been very widely researched. Over 420 peer-reviewed published studies have been done on TM, showing vast benefits to mind health, even improvement in behavior and society. How it differs from other meditations, it's natural, it's effortless. Most meditations involve some kind of effort, focusing, trying to clear your mind of thoughts, or even watching your thoughts, which still involves some focus. And TM is allowing the mind to settle down deeply, go beyond thoughts. That's why we call it transcendental, to go beyond and experience a very deep level of rest to the mind, deep peace. And that allows the body to get a very profound rest, which is why there's so much research showing the vast benefits to health.
What inspired the launch of the Meditate Sullivan County campaign? And then how does that connect with this national Meditate America initiative?
So I'm working with a wonderful team. They're just very passionate about this meditation and wanting to bring it to Sullivan County. TM has been taught in Sullivan County, of course, before. There's a big wave in the 60s, 70s, and there's teachers in the area. But especially starting this fall, there was a new initiative bringing, you know, trying to get the word out about how beneficial meditation is in general, but particularly transcendental meditation. And we're just getting it going in Sullivan County now.
Tell us a little bit more about your role. I listed off your titles, I guess.
Yeah.
But tell us how you became involved and what it means for you.
Ooh, okay. So my current role, I work for TM for Women,
But of course, I teach transcendental meditation to anyone of any gender, agender. And I partner with TM teachers around the country to be able to offer continuing education credits to nurses, to social workers, massage therapists, as part of learning TM. The American Holistic Nurses Association endorses TM, and nurses can get up to 23.25 continuing education credits as part of learning. So it's being brought into hospitals. Many nurses and hospital staff around the country are learning TM.
Talk a little bit more about why it's so important, particularly for nurses and in that particular role, and how it benefits them.
Yeah. It's so important because, as I'm sure you know, COVID was incredibly traumatic for our country and very traumatic for the hospital staff. And nurses give and give and give. They're so crucial to our healthcare system. And having a technique that we can give them to reduce the vicarious trauma, to reduce the PTSD, to reduce the burnout, so that they can continue doing the important work that they're doing and enjoy what they're doing without the weight of it, you know? So it's vastly important. And I'm overseeing two studies being done right now on nurses in particular. And I've helped to teach some of these classes. And it's just been amazing to see the transformation just in the first couple days of them feeling lighter, feeling better, and just seeing how that unfolds over the months of just having more energy, sleeping better, you know, being more focused at work, not taking the pressures of work home with them as much. So it's very exciting.
Without betraying any confidentiality or anything, can you give any examples of folks who have told you about how it's helped them or testimonials of benefits that they've seen from this practice?
Absolutely. You know, again, the nurses that I've just taught recently, they've sent in some testimonials already, even though it's still part of the research, and they tell me that while it can be challenging to fit in, you know, two meditations a day, they notice a huge difference when they don't, that they're just that much more ready for work, again, focused, not feeling as exhausted at the end of the day, just feeling more on for their shift, seeing everything they need to get done and being able to prioritize that. And they're also noticing it's having impact on the relationships with their children, with their loved ones, that they just are that much more present with them and less reactive and that much more patient. And so it's a beautiful thing.
You mentioned some of the evidence-based studies and this research. Can you highlight some of the other key findings of previous research for the benefits of TM?
Key findings. Well, the National Institute of Health has invested more than $26 million funding research on TM, particularly effects on cardiovascular health. And studies have shown that TM reduces the risk of stroke, heart attack, and death by 50%. And as also lowers blood pressure, cholesterol, atherosclerosis. And the American Heart Association did a large study several years ago looking at many alternative treatments potentially for reducing blood pressure to medication. And TM was the only meditation shown to be statistically significant. So they said that it's the only one that they recommend for consideration and treatment plans for individuals with blood pressure greater than 120 over 80.
You've got some introductory sessions happening locally coming up. Let's talk about those. And also you're partnering with Sullivan County Libraries and Cornell Cooperative Extension for this campaign of Meditate Sullivan County. Talk about that partnership. And then also what can folks expect during these introductory sessions?
Great. So this coming Tuesday, June 10th at 5 p.m., I'm giving a TM info session at Liberty Public Library. And then July 19th at 1 p.m. at the Extension Education Center. And these are educational sessions. You'll get to hear benefits in general of meditations, but particularly transcendental meditation, how it works, the benefits, you know, very key research that's been done even recently, and what they can expect if they decide to learn TM, any questions that they have. And it's great that we're getting support from the libraries to do this. I'm hoping to have even more talks. I'm already in conversations with more libraries to bring them up.
You mentioned when you were talking about the nurses and their experiences that sometimes it's hard to fit in the two sessions a day. Can you talk a little bit more about the practice and how often someone would necessarily practice it? Is it up to the individual? Is there certain time constraints? Yeah, I don't know. What kind of results can you expect over time?
Great. So the prescription, so to speak. Yeah. The ideal is to do it 20 minutes twice a day, sometime in the morning before you go to work, sometime in the afternoon, evening after work, before you do your, you know, time with your family, have time for yourself. The reason 20 minutes twice a day is so important is the morning one helps us to start the day with less anxiety. TM is very, very, very effective at reducing anxiety. And we go through the day, we you know, deal with clients, we experience this thing and that stress and this thing. And the afternoon meditation helps to take away some of the stress that's already built in from the day. So you feel calm again, you can enjoy your evening, you can sleep better. So that's why twice a day is so important. But if you can only do once a day, if you can only do 5 minutes, 10 minutes, it's always better than nothing. And it's a very concentrated rest. You get a lot even in just 5-10 minutes. But the more people can consistently do 20 minutes twice a day, they see the cortisol levels stay consistently lower, 23% lower around the clock, the more consistently you are, because it's helping to keep the stress levels down more and more all the time. So that's what consistency yields. Just like you exercise once, you're getting something. But if you want to see permanent physical changes to the physiology, you got to keep doing it. So TM's the same way.
You mentioned that TM has been around since the 60s, 70s, especially locally as well. Don't want to call it a comeback, but what do you expect or what do you hope for in this revival of or this new initiative, I guess, of Meditate Sullivan County here and the wider Meditate America movement?
I'm just hoping that we get the message out, that people are more aware that it's available, that it's a beneficial tool that they could add to their already existing toolkit of all the other things they're doing for their self-care. And it's not a competition. It's not like you have to pick one technique or this thing over another. It's very beneficial to learn. And once you have it, you can use it the rest of your life. The benefits keep coming. I consider it a gift that never stops giving. And so we want to get the message out there so that people can have something to help reduce stress. There's so much toxic stress in our country. It got way worse during COVID and after COVID. I'm seeing it as a teacher, just how much stress everyone's carrying.
Still those after effects of that.
Yeah, the after effects. So learning more tools like transcendental meditation is just so important to help us enjoy our lives more, have better health, prevent health conditions down the road, all of which TM has been shown to do.
Where can people get more information about these upcoming sessions and also just learn more?
Am I allowed to give out my email address?
Sure, if you want people emailing you.
Well, if they go to tm-women.org, they can find a local TM teacher to wherever they are.
You would be on that
website. Yes, yes. So if anyone from Sullivan County reaches out and says local teacher, they'll get connected with me. And then they can easily find out when the next upcoming sessions are. But I'm happy to do sessions over the phone for people, meet with them separately, and tell them more about it. And then if they decide to sign up for a course, then, you know, happy to schedule whenever it works for people.
And that's Sarah Sica, S-I-C-A.
Yes.
All right. And the website again?
tm-women.org.
All right. Sarah Sica, she is here to tell us about Meditate Sullivan County, an initiative that's part of a larger Meditate America initiative to teach folks about transcendental meditation. She's the National Director of Transcendental Meditation for Nurses, Education Director for Transcendental Meditation for Women. I should just say TM.
Yeah.
And certified TM teacher. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Before we go, a reminder, NEPA Gives is today at 7. It's a 24-hour giving event in Northeast Pennsylvania, but also throughout the region. You don't have to be a resident of Northeast Pennsylvania, but it is your chance to give online and give back to the community. We're asking folks to support Radio Catskill during this 24-hour giving event. Go to nepagives.org and make a donation of any amount. Your support is more important than ever as we navigate uncertainty with the strength of our community behind us. Donate at nepagives.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering 4 counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we walk through the gate of summer by visiting three cooks in three very different parts of the country to see what June tastes like for them. We'll hear about the shrimp of coastal Georgia, the salmon of Alaska, the preserves of Appalachia, and more. Coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast, some scattered thunderstorms might develop later in the day and likely into the evening. Some of those could be severe later on. They could include some gusty winds and small hail. Sun and 82 for the afternoon, though 62 for a low. Tomorrow, 76 with some scattered thunderstorms later in the day. 61 with more thunderstorms, rain likely later at night tomorrow. But good news for the weekend. Looks like the rain is moving out. Cooler, cloudy, partial sunshine Saturday, 71. Sunday, cloudy, high of 67. On Point is coming up next. It's 11 o'clock.